So the subject is stories and their transformation. And I'm reflecting on how when we had our circle yesterday, many things came up, different kinds of impressions and feelings. And they weren't sorted out. They were just impressions that come, and they were often confusing, and if we and spontaneous. And if we look at ourselves, we see that our inner life is like that. Our life is just like as if we went round 25 people and ask each one what piece of spontaneous feeling can be happy, unhappy, can be different. But we are like all of those 25 people in each of us, with many different confusing and sometimes conflicting impressions, patterns, and behaviors. And the ones that are difficult for us are the ones which in somehow or other are based on deep story in our life, but the story is not really resolved. It's not really clear. It's not really present. What's present is all the results. And there is where we find ourselves in some kind of automatic behaviors or patterns, such as, for example, withdrawal or disconnection, or hiding ourselves in some way, or being frightened of the world in some way. And it's a sign of stories inside. We actually don't connect with the story. We don't even know often what the story is, but it's rolling through the consciousness, and the results are some unpleasant, difficult patterns and automatic responses to things which give us difficulty. And an example is depression, withdrawal, disconnection, and we don't quite know why. We feel down. That's an example. Or anxiety, when we heard yesterday about life in Israel, full of fences and walls, which is such a tragedy for a country that has so much beauty and hope and life, and suddenly find everything is full of walls, except for this village. We don't have any walls here, and we fight for it. We make sure that no one puts walls around us in this particular village, because we just don't agree. But you'll go to any village around and you'll see electric fences closing, opening. Sometimes when we have our meditation retreats in a kibbutz called Ein Dor, we actually can't get out because the fence is closed when we try and go home. So we have to ring up somebody, say, "Please open, please open." We wait there 10 minutes before somebody eventually opens the fence so we can actually get out. But everywhere is like that. And the whole country, in a sense, is now, has a wall across it. To the east, is the separation barrier. So if this is just an automatic behavior, it's something that just comes because people feel, oh, we feel anxious and exposed. We need to put a wall. And the roots of it are not seen. But we can't talk about them. We have to talk about us, because there is in us all the time the potential for things underneath the surface to steal our joy. We don't know what they are. To steal our creativity. To steal our peace, inner peace. They somehow falls away and we don't catch the source. We don't exactly know what it is. And because we don't really know what it is, we actually believe it to be true. So we build a story around it, a new story called I am like this. I have a tendency for depression, so I'm a depressed person. So I go to the doctor, I get a pill for it. So I think something, the latest statistic is like 17% of the population of the Western world is taking anti-anxiety or antidepressant pills. Something like huge. It becomes belief. You believe it to be true, that I am like this, I have this this behavior. There is, I think, for example, the national emotion, the problematic emotion in this country, in Israel, is anxiety. It's a dominant emotion, perhaps, a dominant difficult emotion. There's some good emotions too. But there's a general tone of anxiety, you would say, in a national emotion, which the politicians energize now and then when they feel they want to be elected. They make sure that there's lots of more anxiety coming up. They start. But we believe it to be real, these feelings, these emotions, these patterns, these automatic responses. And everything proves them. So we need a fence. We have enemies. It's obvious that life is too difficult. So I'm depressed. It's life. It's proof. See, it's the life is like that, and we build proof and believe it, and go out and try and change the world. Try and change things. Try and escape from things. Try and escape from the issues, the patterns, and these emerging emotions that keep arising. We want to get rid of things. We want to take the pill to get rid of these emotions. We believe them. We think the only way to do is change the outside, change the world. So we want to fix the world. We want to buy a new car because we feel that would lift our mood. And the research in America has found that the happiness that comes from buying a new car lasts 3 days. Yeah. 3 days, that's it. So it doesn't work to try and fix things by changing conditions, because it's really in us, and that we can get temporary relief from these kind of automatic emotions in us. But we always feel, even if we go shopping every single day to all the shopping, or we go to see movies and we go to holidays and so on, we know that something is missing. We always know that underneath something is missing. And the reason is that it's us that's missing. We are missing here. And so we really need to turn the mirror towards us and see, not to believe these things, but to actually see and to learn the sources of these movements that often steal our joy and steal our peace and steal our freedom. So I want to, I've got some sheets, and I wanted to save Sophia to bring the computer and the projector and the slideshow and so on. So I printed them instead on paper. And the first is a quote from a sutta, which is really about this, about turning the view inside and learning what's in here as a source instead of out there. So the Buddha was approached by a yogi that said, I've walked and walked and walked and walked hundreds of kilometers. I'm trying to find the end of this suffering world. I'm trying to get out or get beyond this suffering world, and I can't get beyond. I just keep walking. I keep traveling. It doesn't end. The difficulties don't end. And the Buddha answered and said, you're looking in the wrong place. You have, in this 2-meter long body, is the whole world, the beginning of the world and the end of the world, is right in this 2 meter long body. I'll put up the exact quote here so you can see it. We make the world while we experience it. In this 2 meter long body, with its perception and its thoughts, I proclaim the world to be. This is the world. And the origin of the world, and the ending of the world, and the way leading to the ending of the world. Ending of the world means the ending of the world as we see it, the filter, the world that we make. The world is like this. Of course, we all know this in a way, what the Buddha said, that it's in us, although we forget it sometimes. And our response to this is often that we look for the story that gives the origin of our problems now. We have a tendency to say, okay, if I can understand the source of my depression or my confusion or my difficulty, the struggle I have in life, I will be healed of it. And this is kind of the very much in the psychological field, the psychodynamic psychology, the psychological field would say, let's try and find the source, the story that's sitting inside us, like being abandoned child, abandonment. Let's find the source. And often it's a long, long process. We find the source of things, we find a story that is an origin of, but it kind of keeps going. It's not the end of the story, the end of the problem, if we understand the story, because our mind doesn't work through cause and effect. We are not linear creatures. We are not, if we know that this causes the behaviors of now, that it's in some way connected to some story in the past, that doesn't solve the problem because we're not a machine. That is a linear cause and effect machine. It's very helpful to name the stories. It's not that it's not helpful. It can be very helpful to name the story, but it's not enough. And here is where we can, in a way, touch the Holocaust. It's one of the stories, or perhaps a major story, that is in some way buried in the history, buried in the past, buried in the tragedy of what happened, and it has its results rolling into the present. When we look at the present, we can't exactly make a linear connection to the past and say, because of the Holocaust, my life today is anxious or depressed or I don't feel joy. It has moved through so much time and through so much conditions that it doesn't anymore, it's not the thing that just because we know about the Holocaust and our heart is connected to it, or we understand it, or we're touched by it, it's not enough. In Berlin, we discussed the Holocaust in a sense as the elephant in the room. You remember that image. Those of you who were in Berlin, remember we brought up that image of the elephant in the room. Something there is sitting in the room, and nobody really acknowledges it. We are kind of behaving as if normal, but we can't. because there's an elephant in the room and nobody's talking about it, and it just and we're all going around it, but nobody really touches it and sees it. I would like to change that image. I would like to call it an image which is also from the Jewish mystical tradition, the image of the Leviathan. Leviathan, or the whale, is a mystical image. It's also a psycho, I think, in image in mythology, in Jungian mythology. It is under the surface. Indeed, it's like the elephant. It's not seen. It's under there somewhere. But it's not entirely negative. It also has power. And Leviathan is an image of power, that if we can understand or connect with the power of this undeep, unconscious, or sitting the unconscious story or demon or issue, we can actually, it actually has power. Power for good as well as power for difficulty. And so I think that a little bit changed the image from the elephant in the room to the Leviathan under the water. And reason it has its power is because it goes everywhere. We really don't know where the end of it is. It goes into behaviors. It goes into families. It goes into culture. It goes and makes two generations, three generations on. It starts making conflicts in some way, but like the Israel-Palestinian conflict. It has its. It goes everywhere. It has actually a huge power. It won't be pushed down. It won't be shut up. But it manifests in this way through behaviors that come after. We were talking in Berlin a lot about the silence, which is something shared in, I think, German families and Jewish families, at least certainly in my family. My grandparents were all killed, not all, nearly all, and no one wanted to talk about it. And we heard that also yesterday. So that, for example, the silence is definitely shared, and the silence just simply buries this Leviathan down deeper under the water and makes sure it doesn't come out and we don't see it. But its effects are everywhere and going through many channels. Because it has so much power, we also have to give it a lot of respect. And this is something that I'm reminded of Joanne Macy, that she, in America, she's an American Dharma teacher, and she used to go on pilgrimages to places of the most destruction and the most pain. And she used to go on a pilgrimage. And there was a little bit of that in our walk to Sachsenhausen, that it wasn't just a walk to, that was in Germany, in Berlin, when we walked to the concentration camp there, all of us. And we had a silent walk. There was a little bit there of a pilgrimage. And the reason, I think, is that these things have so much power that we need to give them respect and understand that they are, the results of them will go everywhere and will keep rolling. But we can't, another reason why we can't, it's not enough to understand the story that is the source of a lot of our today's psychological limitations, stories that sit in the past. To understand the story is not enough. Another reason is that there is really the law of karma, that causation is huge. And so when we try and understand something, we can't hold it as the source, because it's so inside, so much cause and effect and influence, and so the web of influence is huge, is infinite. And I'm thinking here about a story, a Tibetan story. And this Tibetan story is about a man in a two people in a market, and one was hit by a stick, and someone in the market hit him with a stick, and he starts to shout at the stick, and his friend says, "Why are you shouting at the stick? Shout at the hand that's holding the stick." And so he said, okay, I'll shout at the hand that's holding the stick." And he started to shout. And then his friend said, "Why are you shouting at the hand holding the stick? Shout at the arm that move the hand, because the arm is the source of the hand and of the stick." "Oh, okay, I'll shout at the arm." So he started to shout at the arm. And then his friend said, "Why are you shouting at the arm? Shout at the person whose arm it is, because that's the source of the arm, the source of the hand and the stick." Oh, okay. He started to shout at the person. And then his friend said, "Look, you should know that this person may have had a really bad night. He may be starving. He may not have had any breakfast. And that's why he's upset and angry and he hit you with a stick. So shout at the conditions that made him angry and hit you with a stick." And his friend said, okay, I'll shout at the conditions. And then he stopped. He said, "Well, I can't shout at the conditions, because that's the whole universe." And his friend said, "There, you see, it's the whole universe." So I think it's the same here, that the limit, we cannot just rest in the story and say, because we understand the story, even we do pilgrimage to a story, it's going to solve our problems now, today, our issues today, because they have their roots in the karma of the endless influence and causation. The anger that we feel now today it can be influenced by the story indeed, but it's just embedded in life. So we need some other directions, and this is where I think the Dharma can really, really help us. So I want to introduce a Dharma concept now, which is the concept of Sankhara. And Sankhara, the traditional image of Sankhara is a potter making pots. Here's a potter making pots, the image of Sankhara. And Sankharas are constructions in the consciousness. Kadar. Potter. He's making pots. Keramikai. And this Buddhist understanding says that conditions that we experience, and especially difficult ones, but basically all conditions, all experiences, have a power to create in us a kind of a pot, a form. They are kind of engraved. You know, understand the word engraved? They're cut. They make kind of lines in the...
In Hebrew, it's
choret. They're engraved, they make tracks in the consciousness. And experiences that they then take a kind of shape. The consciousness begins to take a shape. We take a shape. We are shaped by our conditions that happen to us and our experiences. Karma shapes us. We have a shape. And we arrive in this moment with a certain shape. And this shape is built from many, many things. Renata, you have a wonderful shape. Stephen has a wonderful shape. Ayala has a wonderful shape. And we're all different. And we're all made by so many different conditions. that make our shape. The shape of body, the shape of our mind, the shape of our patterns, the shape of our moods and emotions, and our identity. And the identity is constructed by all the total experiences of our life. The thing about the sankharas, the problem with sankharas, is that we believe them to be true. We believe that they are facts. That I am like that. That's the only problem. There's no problem with shape being shaped. It's wonderful to have a shape. The olive tree outside is shaped, has a shape of each tree is different. And Renato and I this morning were talking about the celebrating the differences. The fact that there's here people from Germany and the fact that there's people from Israel, they're differences. It's lovely to have differences, to be shaped like this. It's great. There's no problem. The problem is when we believe it to be absolutely true, and especially when we believe our view of ourselves and identity to be stuck, to be concrete, to be made of clay, finished, and not unchanged, unchangeable. I remember one time I was in Tel Aviv and I had a telephone call, and it wasn't in a good time. I was actually with a party for children on the lawn in one of the parks in Tel Aviv with hundreds of people and music playing, and there was a telephone call, and there was just sobbing, crying on the other side of the telephone. And I said, "Who is that? Who is that?" And she was just crying, 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 this lady. Eventually she quietened down and I asked her, I know her, I said, "What's the problem?" She said, "I went to a school gathering and I realized how much my education, I just suddenly realized how much my education has created in me so much pain and difficulty and formed me in a way that I don't like. And I didn't realize it before, my own education. And I realized what the school has done to me." And the only thing I could answer is, because I really couldn't answer more than one sentence because of the situation we were in, I said, "Look, it's true that your education has made you like this or like this. But regard it as being a shape, like an olive tree has a shape, and enjoy your shape. Just be easy with your shape. It's happened, of course. We've been shaped by life. But it doesn't mean that we have to have it turn it into a problem. But we do need not to believe it to be the truth. That's it. We are done. We are finished. It's done. We can't move. It's in stone." The issue of sankharas is that we think it's reality. It's shapes, but we consider it to be reality. Sankharas are constructions engraved in the mind. Shapes, self, history, and quite a lot of scars. Scars are psalakot, scars of our pain. And it's built by over lifetimes through habits and patterns, their tendencies. And the mind is pushing the consciousness into those shapes. The mind, the consciousness is contracted into shapes. And therefore we say, "Oh, I'm depressed. I'm anxious. I'm stupid. I'm genius clever. I'm this, I'm that. I'm Stephen. I'm like this. I'm like that." The mind contracts consciousness into forms, and these make what we call reality. And in a very deep way, everything we see is a shape. And it's a question if we need to believe. what we see as true. What we see, anything. Anything we see, if we really need to believe it as absolutely reality. I remember a quote from Heidegger, and you know more about Heidegger than I do, so excuse me being ignorant, but there's a quote that stays with me really all the time, that he once said that we forget 99.999% of everything that we experience, but from the 0.001%, which is what we remember, we call it reality. So we build a reality from these sankharas, and we say this is the reality, and this is fact. And yet, in some way or other, it's not fact. It's a dream that we call reality. It's just the forms in the consciousness. And that's the image of taken from of the cave of Plato. It's a nice image. Taken from the philosophical tradition, but we are here with chained to the cave. Light comes in from the outside, which we don't see. The sun, then Plato would call it the truth and the beauty and the light. We only see shadows at the back of the cave. We don't see the light, the source. We see the shadows. Here's a woman passing with something. The light creates a shadow, and we think that's reality. We see shadows, we see reflections. These are opinions. This is who we think we are. This is the world. We see echoes, we see shadows. We don't see the light that gives the source. A lot of the painful experiences that we have leave scars. A scar is tzaleket. And around these scars, they're the Leviathan. They're the big things that sit inside the subconscious. We don't know they're there. They're sitting in our consciousness. And very often we turn these things in conventionally into demons, into issues that we have to try and fix. We turn the sankharas that give us trouble, we try and kill them. Mythology is like killing the dragon instead of welcoming the dragon. We kill the way, the Leviathan, instead of trying to eat the Leviathan. Leviathan is like Naga, by the way, in the Indian mythical tradition. Naga is a source of wisdom, but also a source of power and difficulty under the water. And we make it into a big story. And I think that the Holocaust in Israel is turned into a icon, turned into something big that everyone is running around and almost worshipping it and holding it as being us, and it's the same, it's trying to deal with it in some way, go around it all the time, but not see it directly, but go around it. I showed Renata a few days ago an article in the Israeli newspapers that from the Ministry of Education in Israel that said we should start teaching the Holocaust in the kindergartens. But the newspaper article was very against that, and said, and the heading of the newspaper article was, "Why not frighten them early?" I mean, from 3-4 year old, why don't we think? And you can see, get a feeling from that about how much in this country they're turning this into a big icon to worship it almost and hold it. So we tend to do that, but though with our own scars and our own Leviathan under the surface, we tend to go around it and around it. So instead, the Dharma does offer something very different, a different way of working with this whole thing, with the stories and the scars and the way they collect form and shape and sankhara and the way they control us. And the Dharma would say, okay, let's look at the cave. We're in here, we're sitting here, we're chained by chains. This is the image. This is the image of Plato's cave, is we are chained. The chains are our attachments, is what makes us tied to this place. But the Dharma would say, okay, look carefully at what we see. And if we look carefully enough at the shadows, we're going to see the light. We have to understand, look at the shadows and understand that they are shadows. And then we'll know a way of looking at the light. In the Dharma, we look at the past through the eyes of the present. We explore the cave. Meditation. We practice meditation. We practice different ways of sharpening the power of seeing, of working with seeing, with mindfulness, with awareness. So increasing the power of awareness. We observe in the present moment how we construct and deconstruct our shape, our world. Well, how it works. How we make the present moment. The subject and object. How we are in duality. There is me and there is the world. Ordinary reality as a doorway to the ultimate. Looking, in other words, carefully at the shapes. So the shapes could be our anxiety. The shape could be our fears. The shape can be, or the shadows can be, how our views of the world that we believe ourselves to be. I am Israeli or German is a view or is a perception. It's one of the many shadows. We look at it carefully. Is it real? My patterns and tendencies, are they real? Are they solid? We look at our experiences, we look at our feelings, we look directly at the shadows at the back of the cave. Directly. And we get close to them. And we become intimate with them. And we do not, it's not just a glance. Oh yes, I see a bit of depression. I see a bit of worry. I see a bit of anxiety. I see a bit of confusion. But I like life carries on as normal. I'll just keep going. It's a bit more than that. We need to look directly and carefully at what the sankharas that make up our stream of consciousness. What is there? What is there in our consciousness? How is it shaped? And if we do that, we can understand that sankharas are driven by habits. We understand that they are not solid. We can free ourselves from the control, from their control. Meditation rests this busyness with our constructions. All the time we are creating constructions, which is very agitated, very busy. We want to be this, we want to have that, we will prefer this, we like that, we don't want that, we want to have ambition, we want to succeed, we won't need this, we don't need that. So it's very, very busy. We can rest, we can slow down that busyness. We can have insight into the dynamic nature of experience, which is, in a sense, through us. It doesn't have a self in it. It's like lines drawn in water. If we look carefully at every experience that we have, they are passing, they are dynamic, they are free, they are not constructed into solid pot that looks there forever. If we look at the present as it is, we see things very differently. Things are not solid. And we do not need to be controlled by them, because they come and they go. The key, and it's something that you practice these days together, and we practice in Dharma practice, is that when we meet any sankhara, we don't try and deny it, we don't push it away, we don't bury it, and we don't put it on the stage, we don't run around it and serve it like a moth around a fire. We don't put it up there on the stage. We just let it be what it is and reduce our interest in it. So we may have a repeating pattern like anxiety, or like that gives us anxiety, or something in the past that keeps coming up, creating difficulty for us, creating anger, irritation, restlessness, lack of peace, lack of joy. All we need to do is see them in the present moment as they are, and not give them weight, not give them authority on us. Just notice them as they are, and notice their living nature. They are living responses. They are alive, and they pass through. They do not need to be made into sankharas, which we believe. No need to believe. Just observe that they are made not of a pot, but of air. It's where meditation practice is needed, because it's quite difficult to do it without some form of expanding our consciousness. Because usually our consciousness is made of these sankharas, so it's quite hard just to, with the same consciousness, to undo them. Therefore we need some other way. And that's where the power of meditation, I think, is beautiful. It's a way of standing aside, standing back, and being able to look at our patterns from somewhere else and see that they're just made of water that passing. And when we do that, we realize we are bigger than the patterns. We are not them. They are not us. They're just passing through. We are shaped by the sankharas. That's what's happened. So they're there, but they're not important. They're not that interesting. And we're bigger than them. We're not just them. So we can find our peace, we can find our freedom in kind of our ability to see things as they surface into the present in a very natural way, from the roots in the under the water, of the Leviathan. The story manifests in the present. But because the present is so alive, and that's where we really live, then there is the healing. And there, from there we go back into the past, and we can heal the past. We can heal the past through the present, not by trying to dig ourselves in the past. And we need, apart from meditation and awareness, we need love in all this process. Because it's too easy to fight the demons, to get into, want to get rid of them. We can easily be St. George fighting the dragon instead of loving the dragon. We have to love our Leviathan, our dragons, our elephant in the room. We have to love it because it's so powerful. It's made us. And there's a poem by Rilke that I remember a piece of it that he wrote something like, all our demons are really princesses that are asking for our love. And it's there's something there that in the kindness is integral. We don't do this through adding more reactivity against, because that just gives strength to the issues. We soften them with our heart. And finally, this is a journey to awakening. Just one or two cover up the sankharas with awakening. As William Blake says, if the doors of perception were cleansed, cleaning the present, cleaning the power of these conditioning, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. Experience is in its nature, trackless, passing. We can't define it exactly, it's mysterious. Letting the truth break through our filters. But the door is always open. The fear of the unknown, the fear of going out of the cave and looking at the light. We have a fear that's one of the chains that is binding us. We are chained in the cave because we're also afraid of going out. But the door is always open. And the heart knows no boundaries. And thank you.